Welcome to the Grateful American Radio Show, hosted by author and publisher David Bruce Smith. What did George Washington do that you might not know about? What did Abe Lincoln know that could change the way you think about the Civil War? You'll learn about all that and more on this special show designed to restore excitement in American history. Let's get started. What was the first step toward emancipation in U.S. history? That's but one of the questions we're posing today to historian Alida Black, a research professor of history and international affairs at the George Washington University. And she is also the founding editor of the Eleanor Roosevelt Papers, a project designed to preserve, teach, and apply Eleanor Roosevelt's writings and discussions of human rights and democratic politics. Welcome to the Grateful American Show. I'm Hope Katz Gibbs, your co-host, here along with David Bruce Smith, the founder of the Grateful American Foundation, which is dedicated to restoring enthusiasm in American history for kids and adults, too. So welcome to the show, Alida.
Oh, Hope, I'm so happy to be here. And thanks, David. This is going to be fun.
Thank you.
So before we launch in, Alida, we have to tell our audience about your amazing background. Of your many accomplishments, you're the 2001 Person of Vision Award winner from the Arlington County Commission on the Status of Women, and you're also the recipient of the James A. Jordan Award for Outstanding Dedication and Excellence in Teaching from Penn State University. You've also written teacher's guides for PBS documentaries and served as an advisor for other documentaries prepared for the History Channel, A&E, and Discovery Channel. So for our first question, I'm going to throw this over to David.
Okay, so we're celebrating a number of important anniversaries right now. The 50th anniversary of Selma and the 150th anniversary of the Lincoln assassination and the end of the Civil War. Mm-hmm. How do you think Reconstruction would have played out if Lincoln had lived?
Well, David, the reason that I wanted to be on this show is because you always ask the best questions. And I don't know how to answer that except to say this. I think it would have been different. We know that within a week before John Wilkes Booth murdered Abraham Lincoln, that Lincoln was in fact talking publicly about voting rights for African American soldiers who fought in the Civil War on the side of the Union. And some historians of great note argue that, in fact, that was the tipping point for Booth to really push him over to murder. And so if, in fact, Lincoln had lived, you know, it's open to debate whether or not voting rights would have eventually been extended, but I really can't believe that Lincoln would have not launched a national debate on voting rights for African Americans who risked their life. And so if in fact that happened, then you would have a whole new concept of Reconstruction. And it could have, but we don't know how that would have ended. It could have made the white Democratic South even more crazy and made the force acts and the revival of the Klan happen earlier. Or in fact, it could have sent a signal to say, we fought this war, we've got to figure out how to come together. We have ended slavery, but emancipation is not just freedom from slavery. It's the freedom to become a citizen. And then the huge battle would have been, what does citizenship mean? And I think that is the quintessential conversation that we're still having today. And Lincoln could have played a huge role in helping frame that debate.
How would he have assessed emancipation today? Because there are more slaves, really, now than there were then. I mean, there's female slavery, there's drug slavery. I mean,
there's trafficking, there's forced labor all over the world. Well, it's hard for me to project because as a historian, I'm not supposed to do that, but we all do it. What I do know is that were they alive today, that Abraham Lincoln and Eleanor Roosevelt would be two of the most articulate, risk-taking voices against trafficking, for a living wage, and trying to figure out how to challenge us all to understand that we have the courage to be the better angels of our nature.
So talk a little bit more about the connection between Roosevelt and Lincoln, Eleanor Roosevelt, and what she learned from him and some of her heroes from the Founding Fathers era.
Well, Eleanor always believed that we are all on trial to show what democracy means, and that America was always growing and always challenging, and that democracy was sort of like a rubber band. You know, you could stretch it and it would do more, and then it would contract a little bit, and you'd stretch it again and it would go forward and it would come back. You know, and Franklin certainly thought that. You certainly have Jefferson flirting with that. The founding fathers that Eleanor really embraced the most were Franklin and Paine, but for very different reasons. Franklin, because he understood where we would be down the road. For example, Franklin was the only one of the founding fathers who from the start really argued against slavery and understood that women needed to be educated and understood that the whole citizenry needed to be educated. That's why we have, you know, the beginning of the public schools. That's why we have the beginnings of public libraries. And so Eleanor was devoted to Franklin. She loved Paine's sort of grand rhetoric of, you know, these are the times that try men's souls. And Eleanor believed that for people to take risks, especially to take risks in to build a new nation, they had to have a vision that was not only about themselves but about others, and how to make a link to connect themselves not just with their neighbors but with people that they don't know.
Now, I want to try to connect their minds because
sure.
They came from completely different
backgrounds. Oh, absolutely, yeah.
Lincoln came from a very poor background, so it would make sense that he would identify with upward struggle.
Mm-hmm.
Eleanor was from the opposite end. She was from the aristocracy. Where did she get her empathy?
Well, I think they have a lot in common. They both are totally self-educated. They both learned by doing and then reading others to really figure out ways to help create a vision.
Mm-hmm.
I think they have a lot in common. I think they're both very self-educated. They both very much wanted to go to school but didn't have the chance. Lincoln had, you know, an extraordinary relationship with his mother, you know, a contested relationship with his father. It's the exact opposite of Eleanor's.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Eleanor's mother told Eleanor that she was an embarrassment.
And ugly
and would die an old maid locked in an attic. You know, and her father, who adored her, was a drunk and a junkie. So, and she's orphaned by the time she's 10. So despite their different economic backgrounds, they both understand struggle. They both have an intense, visceral connection to what this country can be. And they both love meeting people. And people help give them their ideas, help them see interconnectedness. And so I think they have a lot in common. And they both understand in a very personal way, as Eleanor would say right before she died, that we are all on trial to show what democracy means. And that's what Lincoln said in the Gettysburg Address.
Okay, so Lincoln was the author of the Gettysburg Address and the Emancipation Proclamation.
Mm-hmm.
She co-authored the Declaration of Human Rights.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Did she borrow from him?
Well, Eleanor chaired the drafting committee, and there were members of 18 nations who came together when it was first founded. And they looked at people all over the world. Of course, the Gettysburg Address was part of that. You know, so was Franklin Roosevelt in the Four Freedoms, you know, freedom from worship. I mean, freedom from fear, freedom from want, freedom of worship, freedom of speech and information. So was the French Declaration of the Rights of Man. So was the Baghdad Vita. So was the Quran. I mean, they looked at everything. But to Eleanor, what Lincoln represented was true courage under fire. Not in a battleground sense, not like being in the middle of a bunker, you know, at Gettysburg, but having, personifying the struggle for a nation to be better than it was when it emerged from war. And that is the exact same responsibility that she took when she is trying to create the Universal Declaration of Human Rights, because like Lincoln, she understands that people have to stand up to fear and say that, you know, yes, fear's going to be there. Yes, there's always going to be violence. Yes, there's always going to be racial discrimination. But that doesn't mean that we have to buy into it. We have to keep pushing it forward. And that's what she took from Lincoln.
Talk a little bit about that declaration. What did it say, and what impact is it having on us today?
Well, with great respect for David, who I hope will not disown me when I say this, I think it is the most profound declaration of the last century. I mean, I want you to think about this. The world is coming from the horrors of a world war. We have never seen anything like this before. I'm just not talking about the 6 million people who were killed in the Holocaust. I'm talking about the 40 to 60 million people who were displaced in Europe alone. That doesn't even talk about what happened in Africa or what happened in Russia or what happened in Latin America. 60 million people. Mm-hmm. And in the United States, you know, we lost in 4 years what we lost basically in the Civil War, but in a different way. Just as everybody in the United States during the Civil War understood what war meant, you know, because it was personal. Either you had somebody in the war, you knew somebody who was wounded by the war, your lives were uprooted. You could not escape the war, the Second World War. If you go to movies to escape, you know, what you saw before the movies were not previews. You saw newsreels right. of shrunken heads as paperweights. Mm. You could not, again, and we have the most powerful weapon the world has ever seen. I mean, just think about the atomic bomb. When it hit Hiroshima, it didn't turn a 10-story building into, you know, big blocks of concrete. It turned it into sand. And so just as at the Civil War, we're trying to figure out how to bring brother and brother, sister and sister back together. At the end of the Second World War, we had the whole world trying to figure this out. And so just as Lincoln is trying to say, at Gettysburg, this is what we fought for, just as that extraordinary second inaugural, you know, presents a new challenge, we still have to fight for that. There's still backlash. And what Eleanor believed the lesson of the Civil War was the same lesson of the First World War. And that is that we won the war, but we lost the peace. And so what the Declaration is, it's our version of the Gettysburg Address. It's our version of the Declaration of Independence. To say to the world, yes, we know there's horror, but all we have is the courage to look ourselves in the mirror and take one step at a time. And the Declaration helps us do that. I mean, just look at Article 1, which was parenthetically the hardest article to write, and the last one of the 30 that was adopted. And it's, all human beings are born free and equal and endowed with reason and conscience and should treat one another in a spirit of brotherhood. Never in the history of the world up until that time had men, women, and children of all races, all nationalities, all ethnicities, all religions be recognized as equal and as a goal that the world should embrace to move toward. And so it is Lincoln-esque, but it's Lincoln-esque for the 20th and the 21st century.
So let's say Lincoln had lived out his term. That would have taken him to 1869, uh-huh. and then lived another 15 years after that.
Uh-huh.
So he would have lived to 1884. What would, two questions, what would have emancipation looked like?
Uh-huh.
And do you think there would have been an African-American president earlier? Because of his assassination,
uh-huh.
the post-Civil War tone was negative. The soldiers in the uh-huh. North were less welcomed uh-huh. than the soldiers in the South. There was no context for the returning veterans to go if they needed care
uh-huh.
until the United States Sanitation
sure.
Service was set up. How would that have changed?
Boy, that's a really good question. I don't think one man can change racial discrimination in the United States, even more than I can think one woman can promote a world grounded in human rights. Eleanor was very active after her husband's death, 17 years after her husband's death, and became the leading spokesperson, really, not only for human rights, but the leading white spokesperson for civil rights. And so she was able to use the media in all of its formats, whether it's television or radio or a public lecture tour or a daily newspaper column, to in fact advance these. Lincoln certainly would have not been silent. He would have been a titular head of the emerging Republican Party. That means that Well, it means we wouldn't have had Andrew Johnson, so we wouldn't have had impeachment. The issue is, how would Lincoln have welcomed the South, the Confederate South, back into Congress? I think he would have been, he would have compromised up, probably, to work with Thaddeus Stevens and Jefferson Davis. It would be different, but I think he would have risked, he would continue to risk himself the way that he had during the war to move the country toward a more perfect union.
But would there have been a Rosa Parks or a Martin Luther King doing what they did?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, Lincoln could not have changed that. There is no way that one person could eradicate racial discrimination in the United States. Look at Barack Obama. I mean, we have the first African-American president. And I would argue that you could make a really valid debate point that having an African-American president has exacerbated racial tensions in the United States. I mean, if you certainly look at the criticisms that the president received, you know, and I read them a lot, they're incredibly racially tinged. So I think it could have helped. It could have expedited it, but I don't think that it would have solved our problems in any way.
Yeah, I'm not talking about eradicating it. Uh-huh. I'm talking about just changing the path of it.
Well, yeah. I mean, look at Lincoln's relationship with Frederick Douglass. I mean, you know, and Frederick Douglass and Lincoln, in my opinion, are the two giants of the last half of the 19th century. And, you know, their very complicated relationship really, I think, showed how, to the extent to which that Lincoln was willing to risk himself, and then Frederick Douglass was willing to accommodate his hopes for a more just world when he and Lincoln come to loggerheads. I mean, it's a convoluted answer, and I know it's long, but I think I would say is Lincoln would have made it better, but I don't think he would have been able to eradicate as much as we would want him to do.
So how is emancipation being taught to kids now?
In the most superficial, one-dimensional way possible, that Lincoln freed the slaves and that the Civil War ended slavery, both of which are not true. I mean, when Lincoln issued the Emancipation Proclamation, You know, it applied to territories under rebellion. It did not apply to slaves in the border states. It did not apply to slaves who were still held in slavery in the North illegally, that people knew, but they still had slavery in the North. So Lincoln's goal for emancipation was to continually keep moving it forward, you know, always pushing. And so when you look at 64 and 65, when he's talking about citizenship and he's, you know, debating Frederick Douglass, you know, he's trying to really put teeth into emancipation, because Lincoln understood in the bottom of his gut, he understood that emancipation was not just freedom from slavery, but freedom to become a citizen. And the big struggle that Lincoln faced was, how was he going to address the freedom to part? And that's why he was killed. And so when kids talk about the, you know, the Emancipation Proclamation, it's like this true-false test. You know, the Emancipation Proclamation, true or false, ended slavery in the United States. Kids need to understand that with rights come responsibilities, and that freedom from slavery is powerful, but it's the first step on the road toward freedom. It is the most essential step, but it is but one step. Mm-hmm. And Lincoln understood that, and Eleanor understood that, and nobody teaches it that way.
So our last question for you today is to spin that question. Our mission is to restore enthusiasm in American history for kids. So how could we make this? It's obviously not fun.
It is fun. It is fun. I mean, I go into classrooms all the time. Okay. And so the first thing I ask kids, I said, okay, I'm going to ask you a question that nobody's ever asked you before. Okay. And it may scare you, but I believe you're brave. You don't have to tell me what the answer is. You just got to keep it in your heart. Mm-hmm. And that is, what would you die for? Mm-hmm. You know, take your parents out of the equation. Take your pets, in my case, out of the equation. Take your possessions out. What is it that makes your soul stand erect? What do you believe so much that this is the world you want and this is who you want to be in it? Okay? And they're like, huh? You know, and so then I say, okay, I don't want to know. I just want you to think about it. And you can see in their eyes if they're thinking about it. Mm-hmm. And then you say, okay, I want you to think about the person that you love the most. What are the characteristics of that person? Then I want you to think about the person that you hate the most. We're not supposed to hate, but everybody does it. Mm-hmm. So I want you to think about what makes you crazy about that person. Write them down. Okay, put the pieces of paper on different things. Now look at each other and figure out what you have in common. And then build a world based on that. And kids will do that. And if they understand that it is a struggle, you know, and that they have courage and they have a voice, and our country is built on multiple voices, many of whom do not disagree. I mean, many of whom do disagree on the most fundamental things, but we still go forward. Yeah, we backslide, but we still keep going. And they got to do this because I'm tired of doing it. You know, and when you ask them that, they'll get it.
It's very interesting that you say that, to merge those two things, because if you take the marriages of Eleanor and Franklin, mm-hmm. and Mary Lincoln and Abraham Lincoln.
Yes.
One in each had to compromise up.
All of them had to compromise up. The men had to compromise up, and the women had to compromise up. I mean, the men would not have been where they got without the women. The women would not have been there had they not been married to those men. Were they influential in their own right? Absolutely. Would they have been influential without marrying those men? Absolutely. Would FDR be influential without marrying Theodore Roosevelt's niece? Yeah. Would he become president? No. You know, so there's a whole, you know, it's an embroglio. But kids have to understand that they have courage, that they have a brain, and that what happens in the past is what helps them be who we are now. That it is not just, let's memorize God Help Us All, 100 multiple choice questions. You know, I mean, you can do the four questions, you know, who, what, where, when, why. And it's all right, but it's going to make me want to vomit in a trash can. You know, the question is, so what? What does it mean? And how does that meaning have relevance in their lives? Mm-hmm. History is not about the past that's dead. It's about a past that informs the air that we breathe now. Mm-hmm. And kids have changed American history. You have Linda Brown, you have Sybil Lovington. I mean, I can talk about, you know, middle school kids forever that changed the course of American history. You know, and kids need to know that if they want a world, they're going to have to build it. And they're building blocks that they can stand on. And we can help them. But they also can learn from the past strategies that they can tweak and adjust in their own minds. And they can build a new world. I believe it with every fiber of my being.
Well, thank you so much for your time, Alita Black, a historian, a scholar, an author, and just an amazing person.
Well, I've had a great time, but I just want to say that there are few people in the world that I love arguing with the way that I enjoy arguing with David.
All right.
Around the dinner table or not.
Okay. Well, we'll have to bring the microphones into the dining room next time.
Okay.
You're listening to The Grateful American Radio and TV Show. Stay tuned for more. Thanks for your time. You have been listening to The Grateful American Radio Show, hosted by author and publisher David Bruce Smith. Here's to restoring enthusiasm in history for kids and adults, too.